We're going to pick up off where Annabelle read and read another version of the same story in Matthew chapter 21. So in Matthew 21, same story, a little bit shorter. It says, then Jesus, starting in verse 12, then Jesus went into the temple of God and drove out those who bought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he said to them, it is written, my house will be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. In Mark's account, he goes on, he says that from then Jesus would not let anybody even carry their merchandise through the temple. So you look at that and you wonder for just a minute, how long had they been doing this? How normal was this? That this was just the practice, the way they just did things ordinarily. As they arrived, they knew if I needed my sacrifice, I bring a little doe with me and I can pick up my dove, I can pick up my sheep. It was normal. How long had those tables been sitting there? How many cobwebs had started to form underneath their chairs because they hadn't been moved in so long? I even wonder, you know, was there a little sheep dung in the corner that hadn't been swept up overnight? What was that like, and how common was it that that was just the way and part of worshiping God? How could we make this a little bit more personal for us? Let me ask, how long have you been coming and sitting in these pews? How long have these been here? And how normal is it for you to arrive in the morning and come in and sit down in our beautiful little pews? And just this is how we praise God. Imagine the elders coming out of their meeting in the morning, pushing open the doors. And the first thing that Adam does is he rips those boxes off the back and throws them on the ground. Mark and Lauren are walking over and picking up those chairs and throwing them out the windows. And Lee's taking his belt off and getting ready. And he's smacking some people, driving us out the doors. How would that make you feel? Shocked? A few questions like, what's going on right now? As they're screaming at you about your unrighteousness. Would you be angry, terrified at the sign of wrath that these normally calm men are displaying? Would you be indignant? How dare you do this to us? What have we ever done to cause this? We're coming here to do our duty, to do the thing God wants us to do. Why in the bleep would you allow that? Right? Just picture that moment, the chaos of it all, as they come over and they with great strength start to rip the pews up away from the fact they're screwed into the ground. What would that do to the floor? What damage would be caused as they just were this whirlwind through here? All this time, they're yelling at us about our disrespect for God. When Jesus' disciples saw it, their minds went to Psalm 69. And in Psalm 69, in verse 9, it says, because zeal for your house has eaten me up, and the reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen on me. Now, reproach there is contempt, disgrace. As the elders are knocking over the pews and smacking you with their belts, is the thought in your mind, wow, these are righteous men. The awe that this brings to mind, like, wow, look at what they're doing. They really love God. As they're putting their belt to your backside and tearing out the pews is in, in his building here. Does appreciation pop up high on the list for your feelings towards the elders in this minute? Right? When Jesus, as you can imagine, as this is happening and our chaos is taking place, a few might stand up and go, by what right do you do these things? Why are you treating people this way? Why are you doing this and why are you acting this way? Jesus was confronted with that same question. By what authority are you doing this? Why do you feel you have the right to act this way and treat these people? And Jesus replied to them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up. Odd way to reply. As he is doing damage within the temple, breaking furniture, driving people out, causing all this chaos, he says, destroy this temple. And we know he meant something very different. They replied to him, it's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it up in 3 days? But as we know, he was speaking of the temple of his body. This passage that we're talking about, whether you're reading it in Mark, whether you're reading it in Luke, whether you're reading it in Matthew, whether you're reading it in John, this moment is the moment that followed him all the way to the cross. As he was being taken to the cross, it was this statement that was one of the things that put him there. So if you read with me in Matthew chapter 26, as Christ has been arrested, as he has been drugged before the Sanhedrin, as he's standing before the priests and the elders and the council, it says, now the chief priests, the elders, and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. In other words, people were making things up. And none of it could stick. But then they found somebody that is said to be a false witness, but he really said it. It goes on in the story and it says, but at last, two false witnesses came forward and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. Not an exact quote, but when are quotes in court ever exact? He said, if you destroy this temple, I will raise it in 3 days. So they took his words and they changed it a little bit. But essentially, they were saying what they heard. He is in the temple, he is making a mess in the temple, he is screaming about the temple. And then he says, destroy this temple and I'll rebuild it. So he knew what he meant. They took it the way you would take the context of the moment. And the high priest arose and said to him, do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you're the Christ, the Son of God. Just say it, man. Jesus said, it is as you said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. And the high priest tore his clothes, saying, he's spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? Look now, you've heard his blasphemy. If you go forward after a few hours of misery of Christ, after half a day or so, he's now on the cross. And in Matthew 27, as those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads, saying, you who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross. The disciples didn't know how right they were. When the disciples saw Christ acting that way And they went to Psalm 69, and we'll just kind of paraphrase this, because zeal for my Father's temple has consumed me, and the contempt of those who disgrace you, God, has fallen on me. You know, I kind of wonder when he's talking about that statement, when the disciples are seeing it, when it was written, was he referring to the structure? When it said zeal for my Father's house, what house was he talking about? To what house did he receive contempt and disgrace for having zeal for? 1 Corinthians chapter 3, do you not know that you are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. Destroy this temple, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. I'm going to pause and preach to myself for a few minutes. You're welcome to listen in if you'd like. But let me look at myself for a minute. I've been cleansed. I have been washed with the water of regeneration. I have died in the waters of baptism and been made new. I have the salvation and love of God. And yet, I still sin. Is there poop on the floor of my soul? Do I have furniture that Christ is trying to rip out, and I have screwed it down to the floors of my heart? Is there something that Christ's cleansing flood came through the temple, and I held it in place? Don't take that. No. That's part of me. See, we can be saved and yet far from perfect. I've got some tables of my own that I've screwed down tight as these pews. That flood rushed through me, and yet I wanted to make sure some things were left behind. Some stuff wasn't washed away. There's some furniture I wouldn't let Jesus move. I've been a Christian for a long time now. Now, I understand there's a few of you that says, yeah, I got you beat. I get that. But for me, it's been a long time. And I look at myself and where I'm at, and I realize the easy stuff is gone. Right? Jesus came through and picked up the... Have you helped somebody move? Right? That box looks light. Look, I'm doing work. Right? By the way, I do have about a 500-pound insert in my house that hasn't been moved yet, so anybody who's welcome to move the tough stuff, come on by. Davis boys. So we have some things, the easy stuff we've let God wash out of our lives a long time ago. Hey, don't cheat on your wife. Got that one, all right. Stop your drinking, all right. Not doing that. Stop. There's some of the simple stuff. But there are some things that are left behind, screwed to the floor. You know, I invite Jesus to come in every single day. I want him to be part of my life. And yet what I find myself doing is sitting down in my pew and saying, have you seen this beautiful Keurig? It has the power, the miraculous ability to turn water into coffee. So we find ourselves showing our merchandise in the temple of God to our Christ. Because that's not something I'm willing to get rid of. When I look at these things, when I consider myself, meanwhile, as I am expounding upon the glories of the Keurig to Christ. He's just sitting there weaving a cord, getting ready. And that's the part where becoming better gets hard. Because we're no longer talking about the simple stuff. I remember when I walked into North Church of Christ in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I said, I want to get baptized. And they're like, who are you? I visited a few times. I want to get baptized. And they asked me a series of questions like, do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you cuss? Do you sleep around? And I said, no, no, no. Oh, this will be easy. Let's get you baptized. So apparently, I had the easy stuff done. Good eye roll, right? I had the easy stuff done. Boom! They didn't talk about the stuff that I clung to. The stuff that was part of me. I'm not talking about the loss of salvation or ineffectiveness of Christ's grace. But to Christians, look at the scriptures. To how much of the Bible, how many letters from Paul and from Peter and from John are written to people who have been baptized, who are following God, and he tells us, purify yourselves, cleanse yourselves, train yourselves, be better. So after the water of regeneration's also already washed through you, you still have work to do. That's what he's telling us. And that's the stuff that's going to take effort. The realization that letting Christ finally move out some of my furniture is going to be painful. It's got to break me up. It's got to tear me apart. Because I have some parts of me that have been unrighteous for so long, I let myself think they're part of me. Pause for a second on that thought. Are there things that we struggle with? Are there things that you struggle with that have been part of who you are for so long, you've just kind of accepted it? That I can get rid of a lot of stuff, but maybe not that. That one, I'm going to hang on to that one. You know, what pews have you screwed down that you know need to go, and it's going to be painful as a whip to the backside of a table breaking, screws tearing out? I think of that passage in Hebrews chapter 12 where we're talking about Christ, and we know what Christ went through. He did not die on the cross to cleanse a temple that took 46 years to build. He did not die on the cross to make the house of God, that physical place built by Herod, more righteous. He died on the cross to cleanse the place where God wanted to dwell. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 3, "For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, the wagging of the head, you who will destroy the temple in 3 days and raise it back up, you who claim to be the Son of God, save yourself. Consider him, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin." How far was Christ willing to go to not sin? Think about this at the temple. You know, he just got done praying, "Lord, not my will, but your will be done. But if there's another way out of this," right? And then he comes before the high priest and the councils, and they're accusing him, and they're hurling false witnesses at him, and they're doing all of this. I'm sorry, has anybody ever done a little white lie? Do I look nice in this dress? Do I look fat in these jeans? Right? Have you ever uttered a white lie? How easy would it have been to say, "Tell us, are you the Christ?" I mean, there could be others out there. I've heard there's other people out there saying it. So how about not, you know, let's not do this. All he had to do in that moment is say a little something different. Yet he resisted that urge to bloodshed his own. Think about that. And that is the example in Hebrews that he's telling you. Don't grow weary. Don't be discouraged in your souls when temptation is up against you. How far are you willing to go to not disgrace and show contempt for God's house? Jesus wants to cleanse this temple. He wants to make it a house of prayer. And every day, Christ is trying to make us a little bit more like him. Most of us are well past the easy stuff, like I mentioned. Whatever we let Jesus overturn now, the tables in our temple, it's going to hurt. But imagine what Christ could do if we let him. See, we often talk about what happened with him cleansing the temple, but have you ever looked at the verse that follows? So Christ gets done cleansing the temple, causing all this chaos, arguing, why do you do these things? I'll tell you why I'm doing these things. And the following verse in Luke, it says, and he was teaching in the temple daily. Now that the place is clean, let me show up and make you better. In Matthew's account, once he got done cleaning the temple, then it says, to the temple they brought the blind, the lame. They brought them to the temple and he healed them. It might hurt to let Christ tear out some of your furniture and destroy it. But once we're clean, imagine the power of his teaching every day. Imagine the power of the healing that he's bringing to us every day, because we are more like him. I challenge you for just a moment of self-reflection. What's the first thing that comes to your mind about something you think needs to go? There's no single answer. What you might say is different from what you might say, might be different from what I would say. But I guarantee you, if I said, where's your struggle with God? You probably have an answer. Where is your place where, I mean, let me ask you this. Have you ever gone back to God and asked for forgiveness for the same thing more than once? You know your thing. If you started there, and why is it that it's not gone already? Why is it that it's not out of your place? It's that thing within us where we constantly return to it. That guilty habit, that regretful thought, and we're hesitant, we fear to go before Christ with it because maybe we've just accepted it's part of our faultiness. We've just accepted that it's part of who we are. Maybe there's shame in really digging into it because of how many times I've gone back to God and said, please forgive me for the same thing again. Have you ever felt that way when you've done it again and you're just like, can I really go? I mean, I feel worthless to come before God and say one more time, does he really believe me anymore? And that's where the struggle is of letting these things go.
Find your table, your merchandise that you're hanging on to. Maybe at this stage of the game, you just don't believe you can. You just don't believe you can get rid of it. Some of our unrighteous failings have been sitting on our souls for so long, collecting cobwebs and dust, being spiritually ignored, unmoved, accepted.
Have you ever reached under one of these pews? Have you ever put your hand down there and noticed that occasionally you do push through a cobweb? Right? I mean, you do. I reach down to get my cup because I set it underneath me and it's like, ooh, cobweb, that's nice. There's just the reality that sometimes our sin We give up on it and we say, I'll just leave this one to God's grace, to the blood of Christ to cover over this one. And we say, the blood of Christ is now that blanket, that sheet that we have thrown over the ugly couch in the living room because we just don't want to get rid of it and we don't know where to put it. And we just say, God's grace is going to cover that one over there, and I'll just try not to go into that part of my house.
Christ's blood is greater than any mistake I could ever make.
Amen.
But there's something even more powerful, uplifting, and motivating than his sacrifice. And that is the Father's belief in you.
Amen.
Think about that for just a minute. God has said, look, I'm going to cover all your mistakes, but I believe you can be better. He tells us that there is not a single temptation, there is not a single sin that ever is going to cross your path that I am not believing you can overcome. You never have to say yes to sin. I, your Father, believe that in you. I'll take care of the mistakes. All I'm asking from you is to try again tomorrow. God believes our faith is stronger than any temptation. Your love and dedication now is greater than any failing yesterday. Doesn't matter how many times you mess up. Right? God believes the next time you can do it. And to me, that is so much more powerful. Yes, Christ cleansed me. He took care of my mistakes. But he says, today, you can do better. And I believe you can make that happen. With every single temptation, no matter how many times you've succumbed before, the Father is making that way of escape. When you realize what furniture needs to move, you may be angry. You may be indignant. You may be afraid. I can't do it. You might be like, look, this is just who I am. God, you made me. So why do I have to cut that piece of me out? Why do I have to throw that out of your temple?
How you function when that furniture's gone. As we clean our inner man, like Christ did the temple, after it was cleansed, we make more room for God to move in.
In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, in verse 27, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. When I am looking at this idea of becoming a better person, when I'm looking at this idea of trying to put in the effort, Luke in verse 9, chapter 9, verse 23 says, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. Let him cast out his furniture. Let him tear up those screwed down pews. Take up his cross daily. See, Christ tore down a cross, but he's telling us, you've got one you're going to have to pick up every morning you get up. Every day you go through life, you're going to have to pick up your cross and follow him.
So what furniture for you needs to be moved? What's defiling your Father's temple? All I ask is you leave today with that thought in mind that I can get rid of it. But you're the only one who knows what that is.
So your challenge as you leave today, as we finish up and wrap up this morning, is
if you know what you've gone to God for forgiveness more than once and you expect to do it again, now's the time to say,
that's going to get out of the temple. Think about that as we stand and as we sing our song of invitation.